This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, 125 years after the first commencement ceremony at Port Townsend High School, we are told that the class of 2015 will have to learn how to surf change like nobody ever has before. A local instructor tells us that your heart isn't just a pump, but it can also feel and think. And we talk with the first person ever to circumnavigate the Americas alone in a small boat. And now we go inside the Compass. It's the month of June, and if this was your senior year in high school, you know what that means. School's out forever. For some high school students, that's certainly true, but here in the Northeast Olympic Peninsula, most graduating seniors are moving on to colleges and universities. Others are doing some traveling, some have joined the military, and a few have already started their work careers. KPTZ attended the 125th commencement ceremony in Port Townsend High's rich history in order to get a feel for what lies ahead for today's young graduates. Inside the McCurdy Pavilion at Fort Worden, we heard some laughs, saw some tears, and were surprised by the talent on display. This is Zach Wilson singing live the words and feelings he undoubtedly shared with many of his fellow seniors.
Take the photographs and still frames in your mind. Hang them on the shelf and good up and good time. Tattoos of memories and dead skin on trial. For what it's worth, it was worth all the while. It's something unpredictable, but in the end it's right. I owe you at the time of your life.
Before and after Port Townsend's 125th graduation ceremony, we spoke with parents and students to gauge their thoughts and feelings on what, for many, is a monumental day in their lives. We began with Dr. David Engel, superintendent of the Port Townsend School District. Graduation 2015, what would be your message to these seniors who are going out into the world today?
Well, I'm going to tell the kids to be prepared for a rapid, accelerating change like never before. I've seen a lot of change in my 60-plus years, and they're in for a thrill ride. It's just going to be a world where they're going to have to be surfing change like nobody's ever had to. So
they're going to be surfing change like no one else has ever had to. An interesting way to put it. Class speaker Colin Coker is one of those who will have to be surfing change, and although he may have been one of the class clowns, his speech carried at least equal parts of emotion and tears. We caught up with Colin after the ceremony.
How do you feel right now? It's happened.
Graduation, like from my point and from everybody's point, is always like this similar thing. It's the idea that you finally had this like large reward after like this 4-year journey with all of your best friends. And high school is different than any other type of schooling because everyone you're with and everyone on that stage with me was somebody that I've known personally since like the third grade. And every time that I can look around myself and be surrounded by all of my dearest like childhood friends, it's just so much fun. And since that was the last time, that's definitely why I was crying. It was the speech. I couldn't even hold it together at the end. It was definitely emotional. Everyone's telling me that I made them cry.
Raquel Noltemeyer is one of many Port Townsend High seniors who got a head start on the next step by taking classes at Peninsula College while still in 12th grade. She also plans to do a little traveling.
I'm going to go to Costa Rica for the summer. Then I'm going to get my associate's degree this December through Peninsula College.
Yes.
And then I'm going to take a gap year, go back to Europe and travel.
Wow.
And when I finally come back, I'll be going to school for a master's degree in teaching English as a second language.
Oh, my gosh, you've got it all planned out.
A bit.
I'm going to ask several other graduates what their plans are. My hunch is that you're a little more planned out than most of them. What do you think?
Probably. I mean, I've even got ideas for after that, like
joining
the Peace Corps and then getting a blue card so I can work in the EU.
You've got this planned all the way to retirement, don't you?
A little bit. Just thought about it, you know, maybe every day.
Every day. Well, congratulations. How does it feel?
It's surreal. It's hard to believe it happened, but it feels great.
Another of those who graced the packed house with their talent was Addison Reichert, singing live the Josh Groban tearjerker, You Raise Me Up. Lyrics of Addie Reichert's song could be applied equally to teachers and parents of these graduates. We spoke with Dehi Noltemeyer moments before her daughter received her diploma.
Raquel is graduating today, your first child to graduate high school. What are your thoughts on this day as you're about to watch her walk the stage?
It's a very emotional moment of my life since she's my very first and she will be my last one. Mm-hmm. Really excited, really nervous what the future brings for all of them, not just for my daughter, but for all of them. But it's an incredible moment.
Any anxiety about her going out in the world? It's different than when you and I graduated high school, I think. What are your thoughts about that and what she might face?
Well, she's going to face challenges for sure. She is planning to go to Europe for 1 year. She's planning to skip 1 year as she has her AA in the fall. Not only she's graduating from high school now, but in 3-4 months she will have her AA and she's planning to go to Europe. So I'm anxious about it because, you know, she will not have her immediate family, but it's a challenge because she doesn't have the language as well, but she's willing to jump into it and give it a try. So I'm very excited for her, but also nervous.
Are you comfortable that you've prepared her for life after school?
I believe so. I believe she's a go-getter. She has a goal set for herself, and I think she's ready to face the challenge of the world. As you said, it's different from you and I, we graduated.
Just minutes after the commencement ceremony, we spoke with a random selection of graduates, still wearing their caps and gowns.
Yeah. What's your name?
Jeff Seaton.
And what now? What are your plans?
I enlisted in the Army. I have an Army Airborne Ranger contract. My ship date's September 8th, and I'm really excited to go do that, so yeah.
And where are you going to go for base?
Fort Benning, Georgia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
What would you like to do in the service?
I want to make a change. I mean, well, I'm being a Ranger, so, you know, help those who can't help themselves across the world do something, make a difference, you know, be an impact in the world. So, yeah.
And how does it feel now that this step has passed, that you've graduated high school?
It's great. It's exhilarating. All this time worked up to here. It's been a long haul, but we made it. So, yeah, it's great.
Tyler Izake Wade.
And now that you've graduated, how does it feel?
It's bittersweet. It's sad, but it's a new adventure, so exciting at the same time.
And the big question, what's your plan? What are you doing now?
To go far in life. I'm going to be going to college in Arizona, Mesa, Arizona, to Grand Canyon University, a Christian college.
And do you have your thoughts about major or what you want to do for the rest of your life?
Yeah, I think I'll be going into computer technology, but anything's possible.
Jordan Turner.
Jordan?
Yeah.
Here's the question that was talked about up there. What's your plan? What do you do now?
Work, college.
Work doing what?
I have a job. I work at the Fountain Cafe here in Port Townsend.
Very good. With Nick?
Yes. Nicholas Yates is a very good friend of mine.
Yes. College, where?
I'm going to go to Peninsula Community for 2 years.
Okay.
And then I plan on most likely enlisting to carry out a four-year degree.
Enlisting in what branch?
Air Force.
Air Force. Yeah. Want to fly?
Yeah.
Do you think most these graduates have planned out as well as you have?
Probably not. I became a father at the young age of 16.
Oh, you're the one they mentioned.
Yes. Okay. So I'm on a little different chapter of life due to teen parent graduate.
Sure.
So I don't know if ever, like, I have to think ahead. I don't get a choice.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, my name's Alexandra Marks.
How does it feel now that you've passed this big hurdle?
It's really, it feels good to know that I was able to get through the stressful senior year and complete everything. The end was really stressful, so I'm glad I made it through with all my classmates.
And the question I'm sure you've heard a lot from your teachers and everyone else, what now? What's your plan?
Well, right now my plan has changed so many times, but I'm actually planning to move down to Sacramento, California, where I'm from, and attend a beauty institute to hopefully become a licensed esthetician.
Ah.
Yeah.
And come back to Port Townsend or go elsewhere in the big world?
I'm kind of hoping to go elsewhere in the big world, but I'll definitely come home and visit because I love it here.
Elena Fisk.
Well, first of all, how do you feel that this big moment has passed now?
Kind of surreal, actually. It doesn't feel like it's happening. I'm going to, like, wake up in the morning and still be in high school.
Interesting. That's a word I've heard a lot when people are asked that question. So what are your plans?
I'm going to Western Washington University next year, going to study marine biology and poetry, and hopefully become a naturalist on a boat somewhere down the road.
Wow. So you sort of thought this through pretty well.
You know, a little bit. Don't have, like, huge set-in-stone plans. It always changes.
I'm Skyann.
Skyann. That's your full name?
Yes. Okay. Skyann Marie DiMasillo.
Okay.
And now that I'm graduated, well, I'm going to Hawaii over the summer for 3 weeks, and then I plan on getting my captain's license and my massage therapy license.
Captain's license? Captain of?
When it comes to sailing, some aspect. I haven't completely decided yet, but that's something I'm content on.
Okay. How far in advance have you imagined your life? In other words, what happens after your captain's license?
I've kind of like 5 years or so. I've kind of have general idea. Yeah.
Okay. And how does it feel to have gotten this step out of the way now?
It's a relief.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's it. Just a relief.
It's a relief and bittersweet.
Bittersweet. Yeah. Good word.
And we finish with more from Green Day's song, The Time of Your Life, as sung live by Port Townsend High senior Zach Wilson.
It's something unpredictable, but in the end is right. I hope you have the time of your life. The time of your life.
At the 125th commencement ceremony for Port Townsend High School, this is David Cunningham for KPTZ News. Last week, Sonia Baumstein paddled out into the waters off Japan in a small boat, custom-made here in Port Townsend. She was trying to become the first woman ever to row a boat alone across the entire Pacific Ocean. The 30-year-old from Florida hoped to finish in San Francisco by late September, but on Saturday, she gave up, citing several problems, including severe weather conditions which made it impossible for large nearby ships to see her. Her defeat helps us realize just how difficult such a challenge really is. So, we check in again with a man who succeeded in a record-breaking feat that was even more harrowing. Matt Rutherford is the first human ever to circumnavigate North and South America alone in a small sailboat, a voyage that covered 27,000 miles. He didn't set foot on dry land for nearly a year. His journey took him from the top of the world to the bottom and back up again. He survived a sub-freezing northwest passage beyond the Arctic Circle, equator crossings in two oceans, and treacherous waters near the Antarctic. We talked with Matt Rutherford by phone prior to his 2013 visit to Port Townsend. I know you've heard this question before, but the question is, why? Why did you do this?
Well, that is a good question. You know, a lot of my the heroes, the people I've looked up to for a lot of my life have been men like Shackleton, Amundsen, Scott to a lesser degree, but he had some good men with him. So, you know, these are men that I've always respected and looked up to. And, you know, I can never be anybody but myself. I'll never be Ernest Shackleton. But in order to kind of know what some of these great men have dealt with, you kind of have to put yourself in a very difficult situation. And I also enjoy a challenge.
Life-challenging situations, you must have put yourself in some. What were some of the scariest moments, and was your life and or well-being actually challenged or in jeopardy during that trip?
Oh, sure. You know, I mean, it's a 27-foot boat, and it's about 40 years old, and, you know, I did 27,000 miles. So all sorts of, you know, I covered different parts of the planet. I was in the Arctic. I sailed about 3,000 miles of the Arctic. And, of course, up there, you have extreme fog mixed with icebergs and gale force winds, and it all becomes a witch's brew because these icebergs will just pop out of the fog right in front of you, and you know you might be in 15-foot seas when it happens, and it's a very difficult situation. I didn't have a radar on the boat. I'd have loved to have had a radar. I would have loved to have had a 50-foot sailboat, but I just couldn't afford it, so I had to work within my means. You know, Cape Horn was also, you know, at the bottom of South America. It's a notoriously nasty body of water.
Yes.
If not the worst body of water on the planet. And I had four big storms down there getting near the Horn. And then in the Bering Sea, you know, the famous Bering Sea where the deadliest catch is and all the rest, I sailed the entire Bering Sea north to south. And I had my mast in the water, my boat pretty much upside down at one point.
Wow.
From a giant wave blindsiding me. So there were several times in different regions where I had potentially life-threatening scenarios. But, I mean, I made it through it, and, you know, here I am, alive and healthy.
So you had many scary moments. How about funny moments? There must have been some instances here and there where you felt like, oh, this is odd. This is amusing.
Yeah, sure. Lots of little things happened. You know, although, like in the Arctic in particular, I didn't have a heater on the boat, and obviously it's really cold up there. There's ice all over the place and polar bears and all the rest. But there was a lot of times when I was just really enjoying being up there because I felt like I was one with the great explorers. And, you know, I was singing Christmas carols, you know, Santa Claus. You know, it was the middle of the summer, and I was up in Santa Claus's neighborhood. You know, he lives, like, down the street from where I was. There's often weird things happen. You know, the ocean is often hours and hours and hours of boredom mixed with moments of either sheer terror or sheer excitement. And so you might be sitting there for days not seeing anything, and all of a sudden a whale pops up out of nowhere right next to your boat who's bigger than your boat. Or, you know, I once had a squid jump over my boat, over my sails.
Oh,
I don't know how
goodness.
It could possibly have done that. I thought it was a flying fish and then a rock, and I was like, nobody could have thrown a rock in the middle of the ocean.
Hmm.
And this little squid jumped over my boat. And I had no idea how it was physically possible. But, you know, weird things happen like that, and you get beautiful starry nights. You know, the Milky Way looks like a thick cloud in the sky because, you know, you're 1,000 miles from land.
Yeah. How did you cope with the loneliness?
Well, loneliness on land is different than loneliness at sea. When a normal person thinks of loneliness, they think of loneliness in the context of being surrounded by people. So it's an emotional type of loneliness. You wonder, why is it I don't have any friends? Why is it I'm alone?
Mm-hmm.
In the ocean, there's nobody to talk to anyways. So it's not an emotional difficulty, it's just a mental difficulty. And for me personally, I think it's much harder to deal with emotional difficulties than mental difficulties.
Hmm.
So although, of course, I missed having conversations and I missed the interactions with people, it was a very different kind of loneliness than what you would experience on land surrounded by people.
Taking on a quest like that, I'm guessing there would be some lessons learned, either about life or sailing or anything else. What did you come away from this challenge learning?
Well, there's obviously a lot of things that you learn, and I spent pretty much my entire 30th year of my life out at sea.
Mm-hmm.
I left not long after I turned 30 and turned 31 not long after I got back. Of course, you're going to grow and mature in certain ways, and in some ways, it's hard for me to see it. If you would ask a person that has known me for 5 years or 10 years, it would probably be much easier for them to see the ways that I've grown. But it's kind of hard to see yourself through anybody's eyes but your own.
Mm-hmm.
And I've realized that through hard work and through sacrifice, you can accomplish almost anything. You have to take risks because reward lives in the house of risk.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have to take educated risks. You don't want to invest $1 million in the stock market without first researching the stocks.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I guess a lot of self-confidence obviously comes out of this. And there's a fine line when you're alone in the ocean between self-confidence and hubris. You need self-confidence to go out in the ocean alone and do it without freaking out. But if you get too cocky and let hubris get involved, that can kill you.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of things I learned about myself, and I guess a lot of time for reflection away from humanity, so to speak. But in some ways, it's hard and difficult for me to even be able to understand it myself,
mm-hmm.
if that makes any sense.
Sure. What advice would you have for anyone who's contemplating doing a similar kind of challenge that you did yourself?
Well, before I did this rather large single-handed trip, I sailed alone across the Atlantic Ocean twice as kind of, you know, like a warm-up, you could say.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, I sailed up the entire eastern seaboard of the United States alone. So it was kind of baby steps, so to speak. I mean, I'd get comfortable doing a smaller trip and a bigger one and a bigger one. I wouldn't suggest that somebody tries to do a trip of this nature without having previous experience alone in the ocean, because your chances of being successful are going to be exponentially decreased if you haven't had that experience going into it. And it's, of course, a dangerous trip in a lot of ways. So, you know, I think that you could do this right now, this trip.
I couldn't.
It bad enough. You, yeah.
No, I couldn't.
You could. And almost anybody could. But you have to want it bad enough.
Uh-huh.
You know, you have to want it. And if you want it bad enough, you'll go out and you'll learn how to sail alone, and you'll go around the America. I can't guarantee that you won't die. You know, I can't guarantee you're going to make it.
Yeah.
But if you want it bad enough, you stand a good chance of actually pulling it off. But you can never surrender. You can never retreat. You have to have absolute determination. You can never think about quitting, no matter how bad it gets. You just carry on and carry on. And if you have that mentality, then you know, just about anybody could do it.
And some of these quests that you do, these self-challenges, are also to raise money for charities. Is that not right?
Yeah. Well, you know, as I was saying before, well, first off, my nonprofit is Ocean Research Project, but this last one, I raised $120,000 for CRAB, which is Chesapeake Regional Accessible Boating, and they give sailing opportunities to people with mental and physical disabilities. And now I'm trying to raise money for my own nonprofit, Ocean Research Project, so I can collect scientific data that's going to help scientists better understand the problems facing our oceans.
When you have a broken heart, is it all in your mind? If so, why don't they call it a broken mind? Dan McManus has a few thoughts on that. The Port Townsend resident teaches a course called Starting with the Heart, Cultivating Peace, Love, Truth, and Joy. We talked with McManus about his somewhat controversial concept. So many of us understand the feeling of a broken heart or a heart full of love, but I believe medical science generally holds that the heart is just a pump muscle and that the brain is the actual seat of all emotion. But I have a feeling you would disagree, yes?
Yes, and I think current neurocardiology would disagree. Rudolf Steiner, who was formed Waldorf schools, said that the biggest scientific breakthrough of the 20th century would be discovered that the heart was more than a pump.
That concept, that the heart is much more than just a pump, is at the center of Daniel's personal philosophy. McManus holds a master's degree in education and is a certified senior teacher through the Institute for Applied Meditation. He also calls himself a heart ecologist and is co-founder of Heart Mentors. We ask Daniel what those terms actually mean.
A heart ecologist is a person who understands that the environment has an effect on our heart. I think all of us could agree to that.
Mm-hmm.
But the second piece of it is a double reflection, that our heart can have an effect on our environment. So that when we're feeling, for example, very much in our heart and very much working from our heart, we can create, a beautiful environment around us
mm-hmm.
that then later we can come into when we're feeling down, and that environment can pick us up. We know that the heart's electromagnetic field pulsates outside the body 10 to 20 feet, and it's constantly broadcasting our emotional state to ourselves and to our environment and to others.
Fascinating.
And so when we can shift that emotional state to states of compassion, love, joy, peace, then we're broadcasting that into our environment. And we know how that feels when we walk into a room sometimes and meet somebody who we're immediately drawn to, or we immediately relax and go into a peaceful state. We're actually probably picking up the information that's coming from their electromagnetic field of their heart. Heart mentors is my business term, and what it comes from is the idea that we are all heart mentors, that we're all constantly mentoring other people's hearts in the best way we can, through friendships, through affection, through a pat on the back, through consoling them in some ways, being there for them, listening deeply from our heart, mm-hmm. really hearing what they're saying on a deep level, and just being present. I worked with social workers and therapists, and a person would come in with all kinds of issues and problems, homeless and kids, and how to get the fuel to the car, and how to find a job. Where do we start? And the answer that we've come up with and worked with these people is we start with the heart. Mm-hmm. We start with finding your own heart and coming into your own heart and connect to their heart in some way. Because at that point, you begin to actually have this empathy that's tangible. And from there, their own wisdom, their own heart's wisdom can start to come online. And often they can solve their own problems or come up with ideas themselves. So the heart mentoring is a constant flow back and forth between two people's hearts.
So we're all heart mentors, even without realizing it.
We are all heart mentors, and we're just trying to find some very simple tools like heart rhythm meditation that make it more conscious and more repeatable.
How does one move from a mind-centered self to a heart-centered self, and why is that a good thing?
Well, we know the heart and mind actually are connected, obviously, and they're working together. The traditional definition is that the mind is the surface of the heart, and the heart is the depth of the mind. So we know that mind speaks to mind, but heart speaks to heart. And the mind consciousness tends to rely a lot on rationality and control, but the heart works much more synchronistically, intuitively, and we get hunches. And we get feelings that are very strong. And if those are allowed to then come up towards the mind, then the mind can take this wonderful, powerful, passionate, this goal I might have for myself or this passion I have in my life, and then the mind can work with how to make it happen. But that information is coming up from a deeper level.
I think you probably have an opinion on this. Why do you think cardiac disease is the number one cause of death in the United States?
Yeah, isn't that a huge cultural problem? Mm-hmm. And I think part of it is because one of the things in this, we look at how our system runs, I think we are adrenaline junkies. Ros Carroll, a psychotherapist out of England, says that we're a culture that's chronically sympathetically aroused. So sympathetic is the gas part of our system. The parasympathetic is the brake and slow down repose. Mm-hmm. So we're chronically sympathetically aroused. It's very hard on our hearts. And the adrenal cortisol that flows through our system is also very detrimental to long-term heart. In other words, we can live in sort of a amped up, always ready, fight or flight, take it on for a short period of time. But chronically, I mean, over time, that becomes very, very hard on our, literally physically hard on our hearts. Mm-hmm. And our hearts actually fatigue. And of course, the brain's solution to that problem is to go out and get another heart and transplant it in. So once it's burned out its resource and burned out its support system, it goes and plugs another support system in there.
Yeah,
that's the brain's solution. I think a more compassionate solution is to start to breathe into our hearts, connect with our hearts, put our hearts in rhythm, and let the heart then heal and reassert itself as sort of the real center, the real emotional regulator of our system is our heart. Mm-hmm. Not the brain.
And that is that heart-centered self that you're talking about. That's the solution.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the solution.
It may sound a bit like New Age pseudoscience, but McManus insists the research is there to back him up.
The heart actually has its own independent intelligence. It's an independent sensory organ, so it's not completely influenced by the brain. We know the heart has memory, has neural cells in it, 40,000 neural cells with synapses and all that, just like the brain has. It's also been reclassified recently as a part of the endocrine system, so it's a hormonal organ, so it's constantly releasing hormones to adjust our emotional state and to our emotional states and influencing our emotional states. But the heart can actually, when it goes into coherent, balanced states, actually sends a signal to the brain that shifts our perception and our understanding of what we see. It's interesting that Candace Pert's work, The Molecules of Emotion, when she began looking for her work, that came up with the idea that the body is the subconscious mind. The body actually stores and is, and we think with our whole body. All those neuropeptides we think of in the brain are actually body-wide. They're everywhere. And what's interesting is she says that 200 to 300 neuropeptides, informational substances, are all, the receptor sites are all on the surface of our heart. So our heart has something to do with processing emotion.
So, obviously, you've got to have heart.
You gotta have heart. Miles and miles and miles of heart. Oh, it's fine to be a genius, of course. But keep that old horse before the cart.
And if you'd like more information on Daniel McManus...
Well, I would just say if you're interested in this work and interested in Heart Mentors, you could go to my website.
And that website is?
www.heartmentors.com.
This week's KPTZ Compass was written, produced, and narrated by David Cunningham. The Compass airs Mondays and Saturdays at noon, Tuesdays at 5 p.m., and Wednesdays at 10 a.m., exclusively here on KPTZ, the home of eclectic, authentic community radio.